Hello, dear friends of futureprimitive.org. I'm here with John on a beautiful afternoon. We're outside and there are birds and trees and a completely blue sky. And so here we are doing the second talk of the series Destiny in the Stars. Three talks on astrology and what it's not. And I've convinced John to talk to us about his discovery, his mathematical language, which is the star zodiac. So John will talk to us today about the difference between the two zodiacs, and how he proposes what he calls a genotype to contrast with the horoscope. So let's start by this. And I want everybody to know that I will stop him if I do not exactly understand what he is explaining to us.
Yes, we have an agreement about this particular topic I'm going to handle right now, that Joanna will listen very closely. She's a great listener. And if she finds that it's difficult to follow what I'm saying at any point, she's going to let me know that so I can say it in a better way. We're taking these precautions because what I'm going to talk about now, although in a certain sense it's an extremely elementary subject and really quite simple when you stand back and look at it, for some reason presents difficulties for people to understand. I've pondered and puzzled about this over the years. I still don't know exactly why. One of the observations that's been made to me is that astronomy in general, just the subject of astronomy, or talk about the sky and the ecliptic and the paths of the sun and moon and the planets, sort of belongs to a mindset that tends to be evasive to most people. However, I believe that deep inside of all of us, there is an interest in the sky. We are all compelled by the immense beauty of the stars, and the starry night is a sight of awesome scope and also of awesome precision. Whether or not you know anything about the stars, when you look at the sky, I think that you will agree that you're looking into a kind of code bank of points of light which are arranged in some kind of fascinating manner. And many people are curious about this. So I believe that in elucidating the subject of the two zodiacs, I am addressing that deep need. And some way or other, I will try my best to get over whatever the reservations or difficulties may be in absorbing this material. So here goes. First, let me introduce the subject of the two zodiacs by saying that the existence of a second zodiac is relatively unknown to people who have had their horoscopes done and to people at large. And odd as it may sound, the existence of a second zodiac or a true star zodiac is also unknown to a great many practicing astrologers. This is a matter that of some bafflement, but it is in fact the case. The zodiac, the word zodiac, is almost totally universal. It exists in many languages and it translates across many cultures. And generally speaking, we understand the zodiac to be the system of the 12 signs that astrologers use in order to interpret human personality. So we can talk about the sign zodiac to begin with. This is Aries, Taurus, Gemini. It's the zodiac that you see listed in the newspaper columns and in magazines and things of that sort. And whenever people talk about their signs, or whenever they ask, what is your sun sign, what's your sign, this is generally the zodiac to which they're referring. We'll call it the sign zodiac. What it is called technically is the tropical zodiac. And it is based on a model that was created or formulated by the Greek astronomer Ptolemy around 150 AD. Now, how can I explain, how can I illustrate visually that there is in fact another zodiac which is completely distinct from this zodiac of 12 astrological signs? Well, I'm going to try this in a way I've never done before, by using a visualization, a simple visualization. And I have Joanna here to help me if it doesn't seem that this visualization is working. I want you all to visualize an empty space, just staring out in front of yourself into the space in front of your eyes, and visualize floating in front of you something like a DVD disc. Just a flat, thin disc. And imagine that it's floating at the level of your eyes, right in front of you, maybe about 3 feet from your face. Now, imagine that you're looking at it edge on. So all that you see of it is the edge. But if you lift your head a little bit, you can look down on it and you can see that it's a circular disc. Or if you lower your head a little bit, you can look underneath. So you know that you're looking at a circular disc, but you're just looking at the flat edge of it. Just imagine for a moment this DVD kind of disc floating in space in front of your eyes. Now imagine that you lift your head a little bit and you look down on the disc so that you can see its circular form. And just imagine that the total circle of 360 degrees is evenly divided into 12 sections. Rather like a pizza, to use a crude example. So you have now formatted that disc into 12 different sectors. And there it is, floating in front of you in space. Hold that visualization for a moment, and then I want you to add something to it. Now imagine that this disc is suspended inside a large glass bubble. Say that the bubble is maybe 10 feet in diameter. It's a big glass bubble, and you can see the whole bubble in front of you floating. There's the glass bubble, and directly in the center of the glass bubble is this disc floating vertically. Now, be sure that you align it so that the center of the disc is exactly at the center of this bubble. Now comes the third part of the visualization. Imagine that the glass bubble is covered with a pattern of dots. They're not in any particular place. There are dots all over the bubble, all over the surface of it, and they form various patterns. And let's say that these patterns can be connected by lines. So you have dot-to-dot patterns covering this glass bubble. Now let's say that there are about 80 or 88 such patterns on the entire glass bubble. You don't need to count them, but I'll tell you that there's about 80 of them. Now, you will observe from the setup of the visualization that the position of the disc, the flat disc inside this bubble, will in a way select a certain number of the patterns on the bubble. That is to say, if you sight along the disc, or if you extend the disc out to the surface of the bubble, it will cut across certain of these dot-to-dot patterns, but it won't touch all of them, because some of them will lie above the line of the disc, and some of them will lie below it. So just imagine then that you visualize the disc extended to the bubble, to the surface of the bubble, and it creates kind of a line, a circle. It cuts a circle in the bubble, and lying on that circle are 13 different patterns. That's the basic visualization that we might use to describe the star zodiac and the sign zodiac.
Explain to me why you would divide the pizza pie, the DVD, in 12 sections, but when you're looking at it, there are 13 sections.
Well, the division of the disc, the flat disc, into 12 sections is simply a mathematical or geometrical device in order to mark out sectors so that you can then say sector 1, sector 2, sector 3, sector 4. It's just a mapping device. However, when you extend the limits of the disc out to the bubble, you go into the real space of the universe. You go into the real space where all the stars are located. And it so happens that the patterns of stars that lie along the perimeter of the disk are actually 13 patterns. There are not 12 patterns out there. There are 13. And they are not patterns that are equally proportioned. So even though the division of the disk gives you 12 sectors of 30 degrees each, because the perimeter of the disk is 360 degrees, when you go out to the dot-to-dot patterns on the globe, you don't find anything like that. It's a completely different environment. And that's the difference between the sign zodiac, which is the pizza model of 12 sectors, and the star zodiac, which is actually the 13 constellations that you can see, which are on the perimeter of that circle.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Continue your expose.
Well, what happens here, if we use this visualization to understand the difference, is that we realize that the model of the astrological signs, which is used today, that tells you you're a Gemini or a Scorpio or a Virgo, has no relation whatsoever to the surrounding stars. The disk that I originally asked you to visualize stands by itself. It has 12 sections, and those 12 sections are the 12 signs of the zodiac: Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer. So, for instance, if you're born on a certain day in, like today, the last day of March, then you have the sun in about 10 degrees of the sign Aries. And that means that you would make a little mark on that disk, on the flat disk, at the 10-degree mark of the first sector, because the first sector of the disk is designated Aries, the second sector Taurus, the third sector Gemini. That format is a mathematical geometrical map that was created by Ptolemy in 150 AD, as I explained. And so if you're born on March 31st, you put a little mark at the 10 degrees in the first sector, and that's where the sun was when you were born, in the tropical zodiac or sign zodiac. It has nothing whatsoever to do with where the sun actually stood relative to the bubble. The bubble covered with dots is the actual celestial sphere with the visible constellations. And as a matter of fact, if you want to then make the transposition from sign zodiac to star zodiac, you can do that. You can observe where the sun stands in the constellations on March 31st every year. It does not stand in Aries the ram. It stands in a region of the constellation of the fishes. So you see, the two zodiacs are actually the zodiac of signs, which are starless sectors, and the zodiac of constellations, which are visible star patterns.
That doesn't work. So, John, I'm curious, why does the tropical zodiac begin at Aries?
Well, that's a great question, and I have to tell you that the answer to that question is going to be somewhat of a disappointment, because it's ridiculously simple. The tropical zodiac begins at Aries because the Greek astronomer Ptolemy said so. That's all. There's no other real logic to it. Aries, the sign Aries, begins at March 21st, which is the date of the spring equinox. And this is not the beginning of the zodiac. You know, the zodiac is a circle. And where does a circle begin? A circle doesn't begin anywhere. You have to designate arbitrarily a beginning point on the circle. And this is what Ptolemy did. And ever since he did that, we've been living under a kind of illusion regarding astrology, because the tropical zodiac is non-astrological. It doesn't contain any stars or refer to any stars. So the problem is that Ptolemy proposed a new format. And at the time that he proposed it, he did not specify that it was a starless format. So the astrology that had been widely practiced in Greece and all around the world in ancient cultures previous to Ptolemy was a star-based astrology that actually looked at the sky. And when he proposed this model, he created the opportunity to map the birth moments, map people's birth moments without any reference to the actual stars. That was an enormous paradigm shift that took place in the 2nd century AD. And it's difficult to come to terms with that paradigm shift for obvious reasons. You know, you have to be an astrologer who understands the history of astrology. You have to have a certain knowledge of astronomy and things of that sort in order to grasp the situation. But the consequences of the situation can be understood by anyone. And the consequence is that today we use the word astrology, the language of the stars, to refer to a system that does not use the stars. So when I encountered this paradox in my work early on in the first years, I didn't know what to do, as I explained in the previous talk. I was totally baffled. Now, I hope that I've been able to clarify to some extent the difference between the sign zodiac and the star zodiac, and I'd like to go a little further in making this clarification accessible to people. The point of the second talk is more or less to establish this distinction. There are some extremely annoying problems involved here. One of them is the problem of terminology. Today, astronomers read the movement of planets and the sun and moon in the constellations, in the visible star patterns. That is to say, the patterns on the bubble. And they give the names to these star patterns, Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. In other words, astronomers use the same names that astrologers use, but they use them for a completely different set of entities. And this is extremely problematical. For instance, the sign Aries in tropical astrology, the sign called Aries is also the name for a constellation in astronomy. So when I ran across this problem, I just about went out of my mind. And however, I did come up with a very simple solution. I decided that the best thing to do would be to call the astrological signs by their Greco-Latin names, which we've inherited, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, but to refer to the constellations by what I call their storybook names or their pictorial names. For instance, you can actually see the constellation of the lion that looks like a lion, and rather than calling it Leo, call it the lion. So we have the sign Aries, the constellation of the ram, the sign Taurus, the constellation of the bull, the sign Gemini, the constellation of the twins, the sign Cancer, the constellation of the crab, the sign Leo, the constellation of the lion, the sign Virgo, the constellation of the virgin, the sign Libra, the constellation of the balance or scales, the sign Scorpio, the constellation of the scorpion, the sign Sagittarius, the constellation of the archer, the sign Capricorn, the constellation of the goatfish, the sign Aquarius, the constellation of the water bearer, and the sign Pisces, the constellation of the fishes. And to those 12 constellations, we must add the 13th constellation of Ophiuchus, or the snake tamer. Now, these constellations do not correspond to the signs, and they never did. They are two different formats, they are two different sets of information, and they yield two different codes. So what I had to work out over my many years of practicing astrology was two things at the same time. First, I had to work out how to read the sign zodiac and use it properly, and I had a lot of trouble with that because I didn't accept what was written in the cookbook, in the astrological cookbooks. So I kind of made up my own version of sun sign astrology as I went along. At the same time, I had a second task on my hands, which was to figure out what on earth these constellations could mean. And I have to tell you that today, this is still a largely ignored subject. If you go into a bookstore, and I have in mind the astrological bookstore at Covent Garden in London, you now will find an entire wall, 10 feet across and 8 feet high, covered with books on astrology. Different types of astrology, different specialized forms. One thing about astrology is that, and I'm talking just now about tropical astrology, is that tropical astrologers tend to be very specialized. So some of them will specialize in the interpretation of the moon's nodes, others will specialize in reading reincarnations, others will specialize in the Arabian points, the midpoints, others in the interpretation of the signs for health purposes, astrocartography, synastry, which is the matching of people according to their overlapping of their tropical horoscopes, and on and on and on. And you can stand there in front of that wall of books in the Covent Garden bookstore, and I defy you to find one book that will show you the actual constellations. You won't find one. It is really remarkable. And I should add here that this blind spot also includes two lesser-known branches of astrology that claim to actually use the constellations. These are the sidereolists of the Western tradition and the Hindu or Vedic astrologers who practice Jyotish. Now, it is true that these two schools do refer to the starry patterns in the sky, but they do not actually take into account the real look and form of these patterns. They do a very strange thing. For instance, Vedic astrology will give you a different set of parameters for your birth chart. And it will say, for instance, if you were born on March 21st, that you're not actually an Aries, but that you're actually a Pisces, because on March 21st, the sun was in the constellation of Pisces. And so what they do is they refer to the star zodiac and to the constellations, but they treat it as if it were a model of the sign zodiac. And they also divide up the constellations into 12 uniform, 12 regular or consistent sectors of 30 degrees each. I have to tell you that this is very puzzling behavior, and I fail to understand why anyone who really looks at the sky would even want to do this. Actual observation shows, for instance, that the constellations, these 13 constellations that lie along the rim of the disk, vary widely in their size. There are three of them, for instance, the crab, the ram, and the balance or scales, which are small and just about 20 degrees in their width. There are others, such as the lion and the virgin, which are more than 30 or 35 degrees long. In fact, the constellation of the virgin is 45 degrees long, which means it constitutes one-eighth of the entire 360 degrees of the zodiac. And so when you're out there looking at the sky, and when you're observing the actual form and appearance of these starry constellations, you're struck by how different they are, and how there are 13 of them and not 12. And so it's a puzzle to me why anyone would want to then reduce them or try to make them conform to a 12-sector model, which is what the sidereists and the Vedic astrologers do. I don't do that. I observe and I preserve the actual dimensions and appearances of these star patterns.
Does this correlate in any way with the Mayan calendar, the way José Arguelles pointed out that there are 13 months to the year?
It probably does. I know that the further you go back into archaic astronomy, you find the number 13 and you lose the number 12. Number 12 is an imposition. It's a formatting device that has been brought to astrology by Ptolemy and by others in order to create an astrological format that works smoothly with a 12-month calendar. And the purpose of the 12-month solar calendar, which is the one we live under, is to regulate civic activities and to control agriculture and so forth. So I regard the 12-month calendar, as well as the 12-sign zodiac, as a kind of social control device that was introduced by patriarchal religion at a certain point in our history. When you go back and look back beyond that to earlier times, you find the 13-section zodiac, the lunar zodiac, which is much more oriented to the feminine, to the divine feminine and to the goddess, and which is actually the zodiac that you can see when you go out and look at the sky at night. So by returning to the real sky zodiac, as I've tried to do in my work, I'm actually taking us back to those archaic roots and to a zodiac model that gives a much deeper reflection of our species experience than the sign zodiac.
What does the word zodiac actually mean?
Well, I've explained in Quest for the Zodiac that the Greek term zodiacos kaiklos, from which zodiac is extracted, has been translated by almost all scholars as meaning circle of animals, kaiklos being circle or belt, just like a belt that you would wear for dress or pants, and zodiacos meaning of animals. As a matter of fact, that translation, although it may be correct as far as Greek scholars are concerned, and I'm no Greek scholar, so I can't compete with those folks, is completely absurd. Because even if it's a correct translation, it does not describe what you see in the zodiac. The zodiac, the star zodiac, the real sky zodiac of constellations, is not a circle of animals. Look at them. Look at the pictures. Go to an astronomy book, or go to a book that will show you old sky maps, such as the model of the zodiac produced by Albrecht Dürer in woodcuts in 1520, and look at the ecliptic constellations, as they're called. The ecliptic constellations are the 13 constellations that lie on the edge of the disk. You will find very few animals. There is a ram, there is a bull, there's a lion. Fishes are not animals. Fishes are fishes. I would say there are three animals. There are fishes, there's a crab, which is a crustacean. There is a scorpion, which is an arachnid. Now you could say a scorpion is an animal, but it's really an insect or an arachnid. There are three human forms or humanoid forms, the twins, are two human figures, generally represented as male, Castor and Pollux. They are not animals. The virgin is a female form of a deific form, we could say, a form of the goddess, but in a human guise. That's not an animal. The archer is a hybrid of a man and a horse. The goatfish is an even weirder hybrid of a goat and a fish. The remaining human figure is the so-called water bearer or Aquarius figure, which is, as I've written extensively on Metahistory and elsewhere, the most problematical figure in the zodiac. We don't quite know what this figure represents, but it is human. It's not an animal figure. And finally, there is the scales or balance, which is an inanimate object. So anyone who thinks that our ancestors, the ancients who observed the sky for thousands of years, were stupid enough to call the zodiac a circle of animals really has a low opinion of our ancestors. My preference for translating the term zodiacos kyklos is cycle of animations. The great images you see in the sky are not animals, they are animations, zodiacos. And they are not a belt or just a passive rim, but they are cycles of animations. They are animations that continually recycle themselves. They recycle themselves every night as they rise and fall across the horizon. They recycle themselves through the seasons, and they recycle themselves over the long, long-term periods of time.
Okay, so now will you tell us how the Circle of 13 constellations, or what you call the true star zodiac, what this tells us about our notion of destiny?
Well, that's exactly what I'd love to do, to the best of my ability, and I will do that to even more depth, and I hope with clarity and accessibility in the third talk. As for the remainder of this talk, I would like to introduce the idea that everyone who has ever had their horoscope done in the tropical format has something to look forward to now, because you have, in effect, a second horoscope that you have never seen or heard. This second horoscope results when you project all the positions in your tropical horoscope into the real sky constellations. I'll give you an example. Suppose that you are born on September 21st and that you are a Libra and the sun is placed on that day in the first degree of the sign Libra. Okay? I don't refute this. I am not here, by the way, in these three talks to demolish or debunk astrology. As a matter of fact, I practiced tropical astrology for almost 30 years, and I used the sun sign models and the planets in the signs and the planets in the houses and all that rigmarole, just like all tropical astrologers do. And so I'm not saying that what you've been told, if you are a Libra, what you've been told about being a Libra with Venus in Scorpio, conjunct Jupiter, square Neptune in Aquarius, or whatever, is untrue. If you were in the hands of a competent and honest astrologer, it was probably very, very true. And you can count on the fact that you received appropriate counseling and accurate psychological profiling, because that is exactly what you can deliver with the tropical zodiac. However, the purpose of these talks is to explain not only what astrology is, but what it is not. And so what I want to introduce now is what you cannot know from the tropical format alone. You cannot know, for instance, from the tropical format, that if you are born on September 21st with the sun in 1 degree of Libra, that the sun is actually placed in the face of the constellation of the Virgin. You cannot know that you have the sun in the face of the Virgin, because you are never told this. And as I said at the beginning, it's a matter of huge bafflement, but most professional astrologers do not even understand that there is a starry perspective to their craft. Not only do you have the sun in the constellation of the Virgin, but all the other positions that would be in your horoscope at that moment, in the signs, Venus in Scorpio, Mercury in Virgo perhaps, whatever, have not corresponding positions, because it's not a matter of correspondence. They have totally different positions in the constellations. And all you have to do, really, is to project them out of the star zodiac onto the surface of that bubble and see where they are located. It's a very simple thing to do. I spend a good part of my the second decade of my astrological work in formatting a star zodiac that I then cut out as a kind of a circular model, and I used to paste it over and around the perimeter of the sign zodiac so that I had both zodiacs and I could look simultaneously at the sign positions and the star positions. The result is that you have a second set of information. The positions of the sun, moon, and planets in the actual constellations is a whole new range of information, and the question is, how do you decode that information? Now, let's go back to the, let's try to keep it simple here, and let's go back to the elementary example. There are hundreds of books that will tell you what it means to be born with a son in Libra. But show me a book that will tell you what it means to be born with a son in the face of the Virgin, or the son in the four paws of the lion, or the son in the horns of the bull, or the son at the tail of the fish that leaps upward toward Andromeda, or the sun in the empty space between the archer and the goatfish, or the sun at the head of the goatfish. These are the positions that you arrive at when you look at the real sky zodiac. So what I in effect had to do at the same time that I was practicing astrology tropically is I had to try to work out what these true stellar positions mean. It took me a very long time to do that, and I explain in my book, Quest for the Zodiac, how that came about and how I had a massive job on my hands, obviously. What I eventually discovered was that there is a code contained in the stellar information that tells us things that are not contained in the tropical system. For that reason, I had to invent some terminology, which I'll go into in the third talk. But first and foremost, I had to work out an alternative term for the horoscope. So here are my definitions, and I will leave you with these as the conclusion of this talk. The horoscope is the configuration of sun, moon, and planets in the 12 equal sectors of the sign zodiac, Aries, Taurus, Gemini. That's the horoscope. What does the horoscope show? It shows you the profile of the personality and of your social persona. It shows you how you behave as a social being and how you exhibit and express personality traits that are universally common to the human species. It also shows, by the analysis of the angles and aspects of the planets, various psychological complexes and drives and obsessions and syndromes that are also universal to the human species. Additional to that, I propose that there is a second chart, which I call a genotype. The genotype is the configuration of positions of planets in the actual constellations. What the genotype shows is your transpersonal potential as a representative of the human species, not as an individual seeking your own goals and seeking your own unique kind of expression in the world, but rather as an individual who reflects or translates the deep potential of the human species. So I'll try to explain this more clearly in the third and final talk, but the thought that I want to leave you with is that every one of you who has had a horoscope done, who has ever thought of, about having one, has a second surprise in store for you, because the genotype will tell you things about yourself and things about your relation to the evolutionary learning curve of humanity that cannot possibly be deduced from the sign zodiac. So there is a great potential and a great perspective that lies in the realm of stellar astrology. And I hope that I am able to communicate this in these talks, and that I'm able to do so as well in the book I've written, Quest for the Zodiac.
I have a difficult question for you to close this talk. But who outside of yourself would be able to read this genotype for somebody who would want it?
Probably no one outside myself. And I know that that creates a problem for certain people because I have a virtual monopoly on the subject. But as a matter of fact, I must admit that I do have a virtual monopoly, and it's my privilege to have that. And I can cite one other astrologer that I know of, Diane Rosenberg, who is aware of, who has a website, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, and who is aware of the constellations. At least she knows they exist, and she has used them. But apart from her and perhaps one other person whose name I won't mention because I'm not even certain about him, no one has delved in this direction. So it sort of comes to me by default to have a monopoly. I would rather not have a monopoly, and I would rather not have the responsibility of decoding this whole thing on my head. But since that's the way it is, I'm happy to deal with it.
Okay, we'll hear more about this next time, which will be extremely soon. Goodbye, my friends.